The U.S. now confirms there is evidence that North Korea has sent soldiers to Russia. Officials are now working to find out why.
If they're co-belligerents, their intention is to participate in this war on Russia's behalf, that is a very, very serious issue.
And if that is the case?
That would mark a significant escalation.
So what are the implications of a growing alliance between Russia and North Korea? What does it mean for Ukraine, Europe, and the Indo-Pacific? Today is Wednesday, October 23rd, and this is The Issue from VOA. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
We are seeing evidence that that there are North Korean troops that have gone to Russia. What exactly they're doing, left to be seen.
That's U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin speaking to reporters on Wednesday, suggesting Russian President Vladimir Putin may be getting desperate as casualties mount in his war on Ukraine.
This is an indication that he may be even in more trouble than most people realize. But he went tin cupping early on to get additional weapons and materials from DPRK and then from Iran. And now he's making a move to get more people.
Austin's comments follow concerns raised a day earlier by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who said his government had information that two North Korean military units were training in Russia for potential combat in Ukraine.
If it's true that the DPRK soldiers are going there to join the war against Ukraine, it would certainly mark a dangerous and highly concerning development. I talked about that last week.
White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby. So South Korean officials are worried Russia will reward North Korea by giving them advanced weapons technologies to help advance its nuclear and missile programs. NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte on Tuesday said he'd asked South Korea's president to send experts to Brussels next week to brief the military alliance.
And then we will see whether North Korea is indeed or not supporting Russia's illegal war in Ukraine.
Also Tuesday, South Korea did say it would consider supplying weapons to Ukraine in response to the reported troop dispatch. So let's dig deeper into this developing situation. Joining us now is Thomas Graham, a distinguished fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and former special assistant to the president and former senior director for Russia on the National Security Council staff. Thank you so much for being with us.
Why do you think that Russia is now enlisting North Korean soldiers?
Well, look, we don't actually know what's really going on at this point. We know that there are North Koreans in Russia, out in the Far East is what I've seen. We're talking about 1,500, some speculation that it may be up to 10, 11, or 12,000 troops eventually. You know, first, we don't know whose initiative this is. Is this Russia asking North Koreans to come and train so that they can now play a role in plugging whatever holes Russia may have on the front lines in Ukraine? Or is this an initiative on part of the Pyongyang, who wants to send some of its troops to gain some battle experience? Remember, I mean, North Korea has a large army, but it hasn't had any battlefield experience since the end of the Korean War. So, you know, whether this is an initiative on the part of Pyongyang or initiative part of Moscow is something that we don't know at this point. In any event, it almost certainly grows out of the deals that the two countries have made over the summer to build closer military ties in the years ahead. You know, who's getting what out of this relationship, we don't know, but there's speculation that each side is benefiting in certain ways.
All right. We already have heard previously that North Korean missiles have been used.
Right. North Korean missiles, and that the Russians have been providing certainly some sort of food aid, but the speculation is that they're also providing technical assistance of some sort that may help improve the quality of North Korea's ballistic missiles. It may have some implications for their nuclear program, space program. All this is a matter of speculation, since we have limited insight into that, is my understanding.
Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin said that it could be an indication that Vladimir Putin may be in more trouble than most people realize as far as a shortage of Russian recruits.
You know, yes and no, but we're talking about 10,000, right? Or 12,000 is what the speculation is at this point. That's a small share of the needs that Russia has for continuing the conflict in Ukraine. You know, I think if you look at the statistics, you'll see that, you know, they need 30 to 40,000 new recruits. They're taking extremely heavy losses. It's hard to see where 10 to 12,000 North Koreans is going to plug a significant gap in Russia's military needs at this point, or would enable Russia to either slow down its conscription or its recruitment of volunteers, or avoid mass mobilization at some point. Now, the figures may be higher. We have very little insight into this at this point, but the numbers we've seen, I don't think, really indicate that that this is a serious addition to whatever manpower Russia believes it needs in order to continue the war inside Ukraine.
What could be dangerous or serious about this situation if it's potentially sort of maybe a trial run to see how quickly they train and then they start some sort of consistently sending more and more of their troops to train to possibly help Russia in its war in Ukraine? How serious would that be for Ukraine and, of course, potentially Europe?
Look, I mean, it expands the conflict. It is an escalation of some sort. You're getting a third country involved directly in the conflict. That may encourage some other countries to do it as well. I sort of doubt the Iranians would, given the problems that they're facing in the Middle East at this point. But, you know, there will always be speculation along those lines. So it sets a precedent that is not good if your goal is to try to wind down this conflict on satisfactory terms for Ukraine at this point. And that said, I mean, there may be certain skills that the North Koreans can provide the Russians that the Russians don't have on their own. If they're using North Korean ballistic missiles, for example, North Koreans presumably know a little bit better about how you operate these systems, what the peculiarities of them are, you know, how to deal with whatever hitches emerge on the battlefield. And so they may be providing support in that way that would make the use of those missiles more effective against targets inside Ukraine. You know, there may be certain types of special operations that the Koreans could carry out that would be useful to the Russians. So, again, I don't want to play this down. I mean, there's a lot that we need to be concerned about. On the other hand, we don't need to exaggerate it at this point either. There's simply a lot that we don't know about what the intentions of either party is to the use of these troops.
What about South Korea? We're hearing South Korean officials are concerned that Russia could reward North Korea by giving it more sophisticated weapons that could boost its nuclear programs and target South Korea itself. And it's talking about potentially sending advisors and even supplying weapons to Ukraine in response.
Now, look, I mean, I'm sitting in Seoul. I'm worried about this, but I've been worried about this for some time because I don't know the exact agreements between Moscow and Pyongyang out of this defense treaty, what type of assistance the Russians are going to provide the North Koreans. You know, you have to be worried about the provision of technical assistance that will improve the quality, accuracy of their ballistic missiles. You have to be worried about whatever the Russians might give that might have implications for North Korea's nuclear program. You also have to be worried about simply the North Korean troops getting some battlefield experience. Now, again, it's a small segment of the overall armed forces of North Korea at this point. But nevertheless, again, we don't know how many troops would rotate through, but seeing real battlefield conditions could have an impact on how the North Korean government, Kim Jong-un, thinks about military operations against South Korea. So if I'm sitting in Seoul, I'm taking this very seriously and trying to find out exactly what is going on, what deals have been struck, and what the implications will be for my own security going forward.
Are there any implications, broader implications of an impact in the Indo-Pacific in general?
Well, anything that helped Kim Jong-un improve his nuclear capabilities, its ballistic missile capabilities, would be of concern not only to the South Koreans, it would be concerned to the Japanese, it would be concerned to us, and quite frankly, it might be of some concern to the Chinese, too, who I think don't have full insight into what what Russia and North Korea are doing at that point, at this point. And that has to be some concern to the Chinese, since they saw themselves as the prime patron of North Korea up to this point, and cannot look kindly on the Russians sort of pushing their way into this relationship. So I think everybody in Northeast Asia is going to be concerned about this and devote significant resources to trying to figure out exactly what's going on.
Where do you think this war stands and where it's headed at this point? Because it just seems to be dragging on. Certainly didn't go as quickly as Putin had apparently expected.
Yeah, the Blitzkrieg is approaching its third year, right?
Right.
You know, it is a war of attrition at this point. And I think, you know, particularly on the Russian side, is that, you know, they're grinding forward. They're hoping that Ukraine is going to crack it at some point. They look at what's happening in the West and in the United States in particular, and think support for Ukraine is going to crack in the not too distant future, and that they will be able to achieve at least what their minimal goals were when they went into this conflict nearly 3 years ago. You know, on the other hand, you know, the Ukrainians realize that this is a fight for their survival, for their own country. And yes, they are having some troubles raising the manpower, mobilizing the manpower they need. There are questions about the level of support and so forth, but nothing that indicates that the Ukrainians are about to give up and capitulate to the Russians. So this war will continue for some time. You know, the Russians could make grinding progress, or the Ukrainians could readjust their tactics and strategy in some way to put up a substantial defensive line inside Ukraine that, in effect, prevents the Russians from making further progress westward in Ukraine. Where this ends, we don't know. But if you do freeze the front line, I think you increase the chances that there will be some sort of negotiation, whether it's over a ceasefire or a broader settlement of the conflict is another matter.
And of course, Russia, Ukraine, the entire world is really, as you mentioned, you know, watching to see what is happening here in the U.S. We have an election less than 2 weeks away and a very different views on how to support Ukraine. Do you think that Vladimir Putin is sort of counting on a Trump presidency, and what would that mean for Ukraine and beyond?
Well, I don't think he's counting on a Trump presidency. You know, they are looking at the election quite closely. Any sort of hints they can pick up as to what the policies would be of President Harris or a President Trump. But remember, you know, they've had previous experience with Trump, and it didn't turn out exactly the way they had anticipated. So, you know, Trump is unpredictable. He says a lot of different things. What he would actually do in response to circumstances is anyone's guess at this point. A lot will depend on who his advisors are. We don't know that. We won't know for some time. You know, President Harris, I think the presumption is, would continue the policies of the Biden administration. All that said, she is a different individual, and she's, you know, made this, I think, forcefully on the campaign. She's a different generation. But I think it's also important to remember that she doesn't have the sort of the deep sort of emotional attachment to Europe that President Biden does, you know, an attachment that has grown up over his many, many years of working on transatlantic issues from the moment he entered the Senate in 1972. Harris doesn't have that. She has a very thin resume. And what her real instincts are, we don't know, and we won't know until she is faced with the actual challenges and responsibility of the presidency. That's one. Two, I mean, people focus on the presidential campaign, and that is quite significant. But the Congress is also an issue here. No matter what happens in the next couple of weeks, if it's President Harris, she's going to have to go to Congress to get more funding for Ukraine. And will she be able to push it through? That will depend a lot on the composition of the House and the Senate. We don't know that at this point. So there are a lot of sort of unknowns that could impact on the level of support for Ukraine going forward. Final point here is, you know, it's not clear where Ukraine will rank in the priorities of either President Trump or President Harris, where it will rank in their priorities, how much political capital They're prepared to spend it, to push whatever policies they think are appropriate, and so forth. So there's a lot we simply don't know at this point, and we won't find out until we see who's actually inaugurated on January 20th, and the team of advisors, she or he, assembles around the White House.
When we hear Defense Secretary Austin say a warning of possible consequences if North Koreans are deployed into fighting in Ukraine for Russia, what does that look like? Is that...
That's what we always say, right? And then we never specify, because then the other side could decide whether they could live with it or not. What could the United States reasonably do? We could lift the restriction on deep strikes, for example, if we find out that North Koreans are actually being deployed on the front lines. There certainly would be some sort of sanctions, whether they're levied against Moscow, probably not, since we sanction almost everything we possibly could, but there may be some sanctions levied against the North Koreans, for example. In direct response to the North Koreans, there are a limited number of things that the United States could do. I don't think it would be anything that would have a significant impact on the overall state of the conflict, however.
But do you think it's this growing alliance with North Korea and Russia is further isolating or growing more dangerous alliance?
Between Russia and North Korea? Look, I quite frankly think that the more worrisome thing is not what would happen to Ukraine. The more worrisome thing is what happens on the North Korean or the Korean Peninsula, and what type of technical assistance the Russians might be providing the North Koreans. As far as the Ukraine conflict, this is, I think, has very little significance, is not going to change the nature of the conflict in any dramatic way. Yes, we were worried. It's not the troops. We're worried about the munitions that are flowing out of North Korea to Russia, particularly the artillery shells. That is a problem. If the North Koreans are continued that, that plugs up gaps in Russia's own production. That, I think, we are justifiably worried about. 10 to 12,000 North Korean soldiers somewhere in Russia and playing some role in the conflict is not really a significant factor. As I said, I would be more worried if I were sitting in the White House about what the Russians might be providing the North Koreans in return that would, I think, bolster Kim Jong-un's confidence about his military capabilities and allow him to act in ways that we would see more threatening and more erratic. That, I think, is the real challenge that we ought to be focused on, the real threat we should be focused on, and not so much on what is going to happen in Ukraine. And I would imagine that's what the South Koreans and the Japanese, and as I've already indicated, the Chinese are most concerned about.
Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thomas Graham, a distinguished fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and a former special assistant to the president and former senior director for Russia on the National Security Council. My partner Scott will be back tomorrow with lots more to talk about, but that does it for today's show. You've been listening to The Issue from the Voice of America. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, thank you so much for joining us. Follow The Issue on X and Facebook at VOA The Issue. And for news 24/7 on our website at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Lori London. We'll see you tomorrow.